Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 271.
This week on the podcast, the 64th and 1052nd person have died in Puerto Rico due to the hurricane. Ask us about our math.
Plus, we've got this week's rundown of who grabbed who and who lost their job over it.
And this week's rundown of who is still the president and who is still the future senator from Alabama.
Plus, Sheldon Adelson's fever dream has finally come true.
And in California, even the rain causes fires.
Plus, we've got the mysterious case of the man and the fire bunny.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We are in the midst of a giant fire smokestorm right now.
You can also find us in the midst of Los Angeles walking around with face
literal
masks
dust
on.
Masks.
Yeah.
I just made Brent come with me to get coffee, and then I also made him walk with me while I walked up to my house in a dust mask.
Well, you kept being concerned about whether you look stupid, and I'm like, you are a person with asthma, and it is, we are in a place that, like, you know, you just got back yesterday. I've been here all week, and this is, like, at least in terms of, like, air quality where we live, which is not really super near any of the fires, easily the worst.
Yeah.
Because I haven't noticed it until today.
Yeah. We're walking in a death blizzard.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
In any case, another place where they're experiencing death blizzards, segues, is Puerto Rico, where not only do they still not have power,
yeah,
fully restored, but also the death count officially this week climbed to 64. So the New York Times did an exposé on how the unofficial death count, which is actually the accurate death count if you actually try to look at the figures of how many people normally die at during these periods of the year, and how many more people have died and where these deaths have occurred.
Right.
The unofficial death count is like 1,052.
Right, not 64.
That's very different.
Different numbers.
Very different numbers.
Yeah.
And if you look at the map of where these death increases have occurred, it's right on the path of the hurricane. It's clear that these are being caused by the outages and also the damage from the hurricane. And yet, here we are sitting pretty at 64 official deaths.
Hey,
no one.
That's great.
Yeah, just a classic couple deaths here and there. No big deal.
Nope.
Not like it would be if it was 1,052 people.
I was going to say, not like it was 200 times that.
Right. Nothing like that at all.
Nope.
So in any case, that's what's going on in Puerto Rico, which we encourage you to continue calling your reps about, because that is, once
and continue
again, American territory.
Because I, as I was working on the doc this week, had left it off, and Lila was like, I'm going to add Puerto Rico on there. And I was like, right, I, like the rest of America, had forgotten about Puerto Rico.
Yep.
So don't be like me.
Right. Don't be like Brent. Remember Puerto Rico.
There it is.
Yep. They belong to us, and they deserve not to die.
Correct.
Meanwhile, the big scandal news of the week, it was a crazy week, actually.
Yeah, like, it really was.
More crazy than I needed it to be, because it was on the heels of a vacation. I was ready to relax a little.
I know.
Shit really went off the
rails. Yeah, you haven't been able to.
Al Franken resigned.
Yeah, he did.
We are not so thrilled with this news,
which
we will tell you about in a second. But his statement when he resigned, much like his statement when he first got accused, was probably one of the most sort of like appropriate of all the statements.
Yeah, because part of the reason why I have been a big apologist for him is that I feel like he's like the only person that has like actually acknowledged it and got it.
Yeah.
And appropriately apologized. He did not necessarily appropriately apologize in the speech, but I think that was because he'd done it already.
Exactly. And he also appropriately made a parallel, which was that he understood that it was quite ironic that he was being forced to resign while the president, who has like 17 or 18 sexual assault accusers and has talked about grabbing women by the pussy, which is sexual assault, is just hanging out. And the Republicans with a full, are about to elect a pederast.
Right. I heard some people in regards to this speech where he said that he was resigning sort of like, deride him a little bit for not being apologetic. And my response to that has always been like,
this.
I was going to say, he's done that.
Yeah.
He did the apology and he did it well.
And it wasn't enough, apparently.
Right. So apparently so this speech was great. He basically was just sort of like, it was clear that he did not want to be doing this. He said, I know in my heart that nothing I have done as a senator, nothing has brought dishonor on this institution, and I am confident that the ethics committee would agree. He also said, I know there's a very different picture of me being painted over the last few weeks, but I know who I really am. And then, this, what you just referenced, he said, I of all people am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Well, it's because the thing that I think is frustrating, I really heard nothing but frustration with this move from any corner of the internet that I'm a part of.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, first of all, this implies that there is some equivalency between, you know, being an idiot comedian who was doing things he should not have done, right, to make women uncomfortable. I'm not trying to excuse that behavior. Right. But he is not, as a senator, made it difficult for women to participate in or serve in the Senate. Right. He is not, as a senator,
or to work for him.
To work for him.
Exactly. No one who currently works for him or has worked for him as a United States senator.
Right. And this is not something where he has repeatedly treated constituents in a manner that is disrespectful or anything like that. So to draw a parallel between that and the president and Roy Moore and make it seem like because he's the first target in this resignation push, that he's somehow done something equivalent to those men.
Right.
It kind of dilutes the entire discussion.
It does.
And I was talking about this with a lot of people who, including, you know, I seem to be connected to sort of also corners of the world where people are very like, well, this is a witch hunt and it's going to go too far. And I don't agree with that. And I even thought to myself, you know, I knew this was going to happen. I knew there was going to be a point where we would lose things we didn't need to lose, like Al Franken, like the entire A Prairie Home Companion library.
Sure.
And like, to some extent, I'm willing to lose some of it so that the discussion happens. Yeah. If I can't ever listen to A Prairie Home Companion again, but I can also safely walk into a workplace and be treated like like any other person there, then maybe I'm willing to lose that.
Yeah.
The
other thing that I think has been a worry of people's, and I think that this is a real worry, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with this Franken story, but like, so many people are sort of, and women everywhere are just waiting for the ball to drop on these stupid women.
Well, and that's it. And what I think all women know and what we have known going into this is there would be a moment where, largely due to pressures beyond our control, this would kind of get out of hand. And then everyone would be like, see, women are crazy. And then the conversation would be shut down again.
Right.
I've been prepared for that to happen the whole time.
Of course.
I think that we, this time, have raised enough of a concern that it can't just go back to the way it was.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even if it gets to the point where that becomes sort of like the male collective thought, at least while that will suck when it inevitably happens, at least you may have gotten to the point where they know that they're not supposed to be sexually harassing you at work.
Right. Like, I think to some extent, it's like how, you know, like with a lot of, you know, this is how it always happens. It happens where first everyone is, you know, this is what happened. This is why Black Lives Matter had like weird corners of the internet shitting all over it when it first started, because they were doing things that, you know, they were grabbing the mic at events that even progressives were supporting and stuff like that. And I think, so the conversation always starts with like, yeah, we're totally with them. And then you find out how deep the grievances really go. And then the rest of the country is like, well, I don't know. These people seem like they're, you know, they're engaging in some sort of crazy witch hunt. I mean, what are men supposed to do? And then, you know, the conversation starts to become, well, this is out of hand. These people can't, we can't just let these people go around and men can't lose their jobs over this, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, then it kind of gets discredited. Then a bunch of men are like, women are just crazy. And then, you know, it stops.
Right.
I think, you know, I expected that to happen. I think this was sort of a step into that realm, because I don't know a lot of women who were supportive of this move.
Of the resignation.
Right. I know, and I also, but I have larger political concerns about it that are not connected to my desire to just be treated fairly in a country where I live.
Yeah, or, sure.
You know, which are, I think this may trouble Gillibrand's presidential ambitions, because this was her pet project, and I think it was ill-conceived, and I think that there are now a lot of progressive women who were really rooting for her who are kind of angry at her about this. And I think that that will become compounded if we lose this seat, which I will talk about in a second, but we very well could.
Oh, I mean, Franken won his election in a recount.
By 312 votes.
Yeah.
So this is not a safe seat. So in any case, finally, you know, what happened was all the women in the Senate came out and said that he should resign. The one thing I'm waiting to hear is, was he doing something to make female senators uncomfortable? Because it's weird that all of them got on board for this, but like can't seem to unify around getting the president to resign. know? Like, why is it that like Maxine Waters is the only person trying to get the president out?
Right. Yeah.
But like all the women in the Senate could agree that Al Franken
had to go.
I also think that there's no benefit to having the moral high ground in this conversation because we have it already.
Well, and that is exactly what I have been saying too, because I think that so many things, like, and you know, I had a long discussion with my mother about this. I was telling you last night, I was like, she either finally decided to agree with me or she just wanted me to shut up. I could never really get to the bottom of what her true feelings were at that point. But I think that the people in the party who wanted him to resign, I think all probably realized on some basic level that he probably shouldn't have had to have. But yeah, they wanted politically to have the high ground here. And my response to that is like,
we have
but
it.
To, but, well, we have it, but we like, it. But also like, but to what end though anyway?
Well, this
like,
is what
like
happens.
having the moral high ground doesn't get Trump to leave. Having the moral high ground doesn't mean that Roy Moore come Wednesday morning is not going to be your new senator from Alabama.
It means, much like what we have seen at the gubernatorial level, that New York State loses one of its greatest governors in modern history and Louisiana gets to keep their asshat for the same crime.
Right.
You know, Elliot Spitzer had to resign because he hired a prostitute, which I could say safely that most New Yorkers don't give two shits about. And it was like a political hit job because he was really tough on Wall Street.
Right.
David Vitter was on the D.C. Madam's call list, and didn't he, like, force someone to have an abortion or something? I mean, he's been having scandals up a storm. That man stayed the governor for years after that.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what happens, and that's what always happens. Republicans do not resign when these things happen. They stay in office, and no one does anything.
Right.
Democrats resign, and they lose.
Yeah.
They lose every time.
Yep.
We always lose when this happens, and we're just losing again because in a state like Minnesota, there is a real concern that this seat doesn't stay in the party.
Yeah.
Not only because the state has been trending right of late, and I know a lot of states are trending left, our state certainly is, but Minnesota is not one of those states. Minnesota, for the last few presidential elections, has been trending right, even as they elect Democratic, they vote for Democrats. This was once Paul Wellstone's seat. He was one of the most progressive members of the Senate. Remember, he died in a plane crash. It was very tragic. Yep. There were a lot of left-wing conspiracy theories about how that plane crashed.
Of course.
It was in an era of plane crashes. It was during the JFK Jr. plane
yes,
crash era.
It was. Yeah.
But Franken actually replaced a Republican for that seat, and he only won by 312 votes.
Yeah.
That's not a safe seat.
It was a recount, yeah. And also, by the way, Norm Coleman, I read, has said that he has not ruled out rerunning for the seat.
And you know what? At 312 seats, you got to remember, Al Franken was already a celebrity. They don't have another celebrity. They don't have another famous comedian to run for that seat in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be...
The only other one that they might have also can't run.
Exactly.
Because he's befell the same fate that...
Did you just hear me say Minnesota in a Minnesota accent, by the way? I didn't.
No.
It was weird. I just heard it come out of my mouth. I was like, what am I doing?
Hmm. You're like the most un-Minnesota person that I have ever met.
I know, except for that I have a cousin who's running for governor there.
Yeah.
So I have deep political connections.
Sure.
I also have another cousin.
You don't like hot dishes, though.
Which is, I have another cousin that is
for casserole.
That is sort of vehemently like opposes everything my mom ever posts on Facebook and gets into weird Facebook wars with her.
Sure.
But my cousin who's running for governor is great.
Nice.
Definitely vote for her. Tina Liebling, do it.
Yeah.
But in any case, This is a concerning situation to put the Senate in, because as much as we expect 2018 to be kind of a windfall for Democrats, we have no guarantee that this will happen. And it's very difficult to win back a seat that someone who left in disgrace has just given up.
Yeah.
So
hopefully the people in Minnesota feel similarly to how we do. And I have a feeling at least a good chunk of them probably do.
Sure, but
so
again,
I don't know how disgraced they actually think
is. No, I don't think. I think that's probably true. I think that there may be some disenchantment with the Democratic Party for forcing this move, though, and that might not help turnout.
Yeah.
Because this is a midterm election.
Yeah,
it's not a general election.
Yeah.
So I mean,
that person only gets it to 2020. I mean, it would be crappy to lose it for 2 years.
Yeah, but
basically, what it is because
I know, but they finish out the term.
Yeah,
but,
of course. So that's
that flips the seat.
2 years. Yes, exactly.
Then we're running against an incumbent.
Right.
We don't need that shit.
No.
We had Al Franken in there. I said he should have run for vice president because at least we would have had someone funny to make fun of Trump.
I know.
In any case.
Yeah.
The other person who resigned is John Conyers, who is the longest-serving member of the House, and that was not necessarily, it was a shock that he resigned because he...
And it happened before Franken, so it sort of like got gobbled up in the Franken news, because we're going to get to another person
who had to
resign
too. Well, it was a slightly more justified resignation, so that's probably why.
Yes.
But he was also like 1 trillion years old and had actually landed in the hospital recently.
Yeah, I think he was like 88.
Yeah, he's old because he's been in the House since 1965.
Yeah, but he's definitely,
but he's an
icon, for sure, yeah.
But that, yeah, he got pressured by basically every body that he belongs to in the House.
Yeah, but not initially, though, actually, because remember last week Nancy Pelosi caught some flack because she was on Meet the Press and she was like, basically was like, no, I don't think you should have to resign. And like, you know, he's an icon and like, oh, and then she also sort of was like, I don't know who these women are. Have they come out? Do we know who these, like, basically did some of her own, you know, victim shaming, which is, you know, doesn't seem that far-fetched for Nancy Pelosi to be getting up to, probably. Nope. But they should have known better, those women, probably.
Probably wearing short skirts.
But anyway, later in the week, she had changed her tune, I think probably in large part to the blowback that came upon her to her.
I do have this feeling, and this holds true only because I think if we really want to use this criteria to vet our senators and congressmen, then we should use it to vet all of them, and we're not going to.
Right.
But, you know, the people of Minnesota elected Al Franken. It should be up to the people of Minnesota to call for his resignation, just as it should be up to John Conyers' constituents to call for his resignation, because you are allowed to elect an asshole to serve. And that's why Donald Trump is currently the president.
I was going to say, people are doing all over the country. We're doing it collectively as a country.
I mean, as much as I don't want Roy Moore to be in the Senate, it's not illegal for him to be elected.
No.
The only time that I think it would be or should be illegal is if he has proven, if he has committed a crime, and I believe in his case he has, but not one that he's been prosecuted for.
Right.
But I mean, like, it is one thing, I think, to ask someone who has committed a crime and been convicted of a crime to leave office if it is something that impacts their ability to do their job.
Yeah.
And impacts their ability to fairly and accurately represent their constituents.
Right.
If you are just an asshole, though, there's a zillion of those guys in the Senate and Congress. As I said, if they really want people to start talking in D.C., they're all going to go down.
Right.
So, and Conyers actually,
and that's the thing.
There's an interesting...
I did not know this at all. But, like, part of the reason why, because this was sort of, like, one of the, basically, where we are sort of, like, socially and culturally right now is basically sort of, like, what brought John Conyers down. Because we have known about this behavior of his for a long time, because actually this came out in 2015, but there had been rumblings of it prior to this.
Remember when Harvey Weinstein was in for every year of the last 15 years? Was
But BuzzFeed in 2015 had reported that he used $27,000 of taxpayer money out of his own campaign, like his own
campaign fund,
to settle a complaint by a female aide who claimed that she was fired after not giving into his sexual advances. And the only mistake that he made there was using his own money. And what Conyers called for, like, in a radio interview on his way out, basically, and I was like, well, holy crap, that probably won't ever happen because it'll bring the whole U.S. House crashing down. But basically, he claimed that he wanted the whole, that this to be looked at, because apparently there are many other settlements like this, or so he claims anyway, have been paid, but they're being paid from a centralized House account, so they remain secret. So they're not public. Because
there's
fund. Like, your own funds, like, you know, either your campaign or, like, what, you know, like, what you're doing as, while you're in office.
Yeah.
Like, that's made public. And
there
so that's how they found out
about this
$27,000.
There was a Republican House member who got brought down for the same thing, but it was like $64,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
But there is a secret slush fund, because this is a common problem that people serving in the House and Senate have, and people serving in any majority male body have, I would argue.
Yeah.
And
so I feel like if I don't like the fact that Al Franken had to resign, or really, I don't know. I mean, this, I think, is a little bit of a different animal here, perhaps.
I agree.
I want to hear about these payments. I was going to say, we've got to get to the bottom of it, because it's, we can't just
I
want
to hear about
having
all these payments. We don't even have to get to the bottom of anything.
No, we
just,
don't.
There's no mystery here. We know that House members are making payments to women that they are sexually harassing. Where's the slush fund money going? This is taxpayer money.
Well,
it's not their personal fortunes.
No.
So if John Conyers is not the only member of the House using taxpayer money to pay off women that he's been harassing.
Yeah, I'd like to know who the others
are. I would like to know who the others are. I would argue it's a lot of people we don't want to see on that list. And I bet in the Senate, same thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, I mean, there's no mystery here. Now, the only mystery of the John Conyers case is who's going to succeed him, because his son and, I guess, his, like, cousin or his son's cousin or somebody are both running for the seat.
Yeah, so he endorsed his son. John Conyers endorsed his son. But his, like, great-nephew, I think, or something, both of whom have the Conyers last name, claimed that they're going to run for it. So it could cause
a
real family feud.
His son has a problem, because I think it was his son who was recently, like, convicted of, like, chasing his wife with a knife or something. There was a parallel slight harassment angle to to this story. I can't remember exactly what the details were, but his son has some legal issues that make it sound like maybe the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, and that might complicate his re-election or his election in the first place. Trent Franks, who is a Arizona Republican, is also resigning from Congress.
Yeah, and he tried to... You might not have heard of this one, because he tried to...
Tried to couch it.
Yeah, but you know what? We see you, Trent Franks.
Yeah.
We're on to you.
Republicans are also harassing women.
Right. He announced in a statement, like, 2 hours after Franken resigned. Yeah. He really tried his best to hide this, but, you know, we found you.
Yeah. He was the one who... You might have heard about this, because it was such a ridiculous story. Approached two female staffers about... fertility issues and whether they'd be surrogates for him.
Right. Yeah. He was going to pay. Didn't he say like one of them claimed like he was going to pay them $1 million to like carry his baby for them or something? Bonkers. Yeah.
Oh. But in case you're worried, the House Republicans went and prayed with him before this all happened. So they're all hoping for the best for him. Yeah.
Gross.
He's one of the Republicans, by the way, who thinks that there's a difference between legitimate and illegitimate rape.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Back in 2013, he said, incidence of rape resulting in pregnancy are very low, based on non-science, because there is no scientific fact
that says that. And this is another thing, too, that really pisses me off and has happened time and time again in regards to this double standard here. Republicans get to get away with this because they somehow are the only ones that get to pray about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I want to also... I want to know which of these representatives and senators... made women's lives harder. Because as my representative, that's really all I care about.
Yeah.
If Al Franken did not make my life harder, but this man certainly did.
Yeah,
like,
he did.
That is a double standard I'd also like to see raised.
Well,
Democrats shouldn't, you know, it's nice that we have standards, but Democrats shouldn't have to resign for saying shit when they're not, you know, when policy-wise, they're not, you know, or for past transgressions when policy-wise they're voting in the interest of the people that they supposedly transgress, while Republicans stay in office quoting fake science facts and, you know, telling us that there's no such thing as legitimate rape or whatever, and then get to, you know, stay in... I mean, like, if we're in a world... I prefer a world where everyone resigns in the whole Senate and Congress and we start over.
Right,
but
I know.
If we're not in that world, there shouldn't be a double standard.
Yeah, exactly.
Trent shouldn't get... Trent should not...
Franks. Yeah.
Sorry, Trent Franks should not get the entire Republican caucus praying with him while Al Franken gets shafted by the news.
Correct. That's right.
Here's who didn't resign this week.
The president.
Donald Trump. Number two.
Roy Moore.
Still in the race.
Still in the race.
Still a pederast, still in the race.
That's right.
There was some controversy this week over whether or not somebody had forged his signature on one of the notes that he wrote in a yearbook or something
of course, of
one
of
the teenagers. Here's what happened, you guys.
She
noted when he had written the inscription.
Right, because she wanted to remember
the creepy 30
years later how upsetting it was and the date in which it happened.
Exactly. So he there is still validity to the story that he signed that creepy note into her yearbook or whatever it was.
Yes. Handwriting experts have also claimed that, yes, indeed, he did actually write that note.
Correct.
By the way.
But if you read Fox News this week.
No.
There was a big controversy because it never happened.
That's right. Yes.
But
anyway.
Speaking of pederasts.
Yeah. Trump endorsed him this week, which he had vaguely kind of getting around to doing.
He had basically endorsed him.
He basically
endorsed him while his own party was endorsing Luther Strange.
Right.
Remember when at the Luther Strange rally he endorsed him?
Right.
He endorsed him in Florida, though, which is not Alabama.
Alabama.
Surprising as that may be.
Close, but not quite.
Similarly frustrating, but... Yeah. Different.
And it wasn't a rally for Roy Moore. It was just some mystery rally.
He's been doing fundraisers.
Yeah, he's been doing campaign rallies.
He was in New York while I was there.
That's right.
We accidentally had a run-in with his motorcade.
But he had two instances of saying Roy Moore's name at this rally, both of which were sort of crazy, so we'll just read them to you.
Yeah.
He said, "We want people coming into our country who love our people, support our economy, and embrace our values. It's time to get our priorities straight." And then he points and he says, "This guy is screaming, 'We want Roy Moore.' He is right.
He is a Floridian and he does not matter."
Right.
And then he also said, "We love our veterans. Mm-hmm. We want conservative judges like Judge Gorsuch in the Supreme Court doing a great job, too.
Yeah.
We want people that are going to protect your gun rights. Great trade deals instead of horrible deals.
Yeah.
And we want jobs, jobs, jobs.
Oh,
so
sure.
Get out and vote for Roy Moore. Do it, do it, do it."
Yeah, he's also recording a robocall for him, but this is probably because, you know,
Trump
won Alabama by like 30 points and still has some cred there, yeah, which is upsetting. But he, the latest Washington Post poll has Jones ahead 50-47. There's some other polling that's come out recently that has Moore ahead by like 4 or 5. So, I mean, we know from the last election that we have at some point forgotten how to do polls.
Yeah, we don't know how to
so
poll anymore.
So there's no way to know who's going
anything
to win.
Anything could happen.
But Trump actually in this race, it's one of the few last places where he can actually probably help.
Yeah.
So he's trying.
Although that's probably going to diminish the longer this goes on. I mean, the election's in a couple days, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I still do feel like there has to be some sort of plan that has not yet been made aware to people, because I don't know what they would say, but like, because I think it would infuriate the people of Alabama. But like, one of the people who was calling for Al Franken's resignation this week was Mitch McConnell. And while I know that Mitch McConnell is certainly happy with a double standard, Mitch McConnell also is not trying to be dealing with Roy Moore either. And I don't feel like
maybe this is a setup for them to get him to resign.
I still think there has to be some sort of
way to not have him be in the Senate.
I think that they don't intend to seat him even if he wins. And I could be totally wrong, because maybe they just won't care that it's just another Republican and who gives a shit whether it's Roy Moore. But like, I just don't think, like, McConnell was fairly vocal this week, like vocal enough that it's going to be
tough.
Too curious for him, I think.
I also think, you know, the thing that they don't want in the Senate is the problem that the House has, which is they can never get enough votes for anything.
Yes,
they
exactly.
have these wing nuts.
Yeah,
on
that's
the right.
why he. Yeah, that's why they
don't want this guy.
They don't want that guy. No. They never did.
No. I mean, they never did. But like, they don't. They want to keep Alabama because it's real embarrassing if you're Republicans and you lose Alabama.
Right.
But like, they don't want another Ted Cruz in there.
No.
Because then they have two Ted Cruzes that can hold up votes.
Yeah.
One Ted Cruz can't do shit because he's just one guy.
Yeah.
But they can't. Two Ted Cruzes is a dangerous number of Ted Cruzes.
And this guy is even worse, because we're going to tell you about something that we were reminded of this week, that he, because the Los Angeles Times reported on it, but they had apparently reported on it before, but just, you know, there's an election coming up, so let's remind everyone.
Hey, Brent, when was the last time America was great, according to Roy Moore?
Well, slavery, obviously, because
families were together. They had strong families back then.
Right.
Not strong African-American families, because they couldn't be trusted. They couldn't not be trusted. They couldn't be allowed to stay together.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have a feeling probably some of the African-American families at that time, the ones that weren't ripped apart, probably were
very
close with each
Hardship
other, because they were
people close.
I was going to say, because they were, you know, concerned for their lives at every turn. So that is probably not what we're looking for.
Our country had a direction, according to him, back then.
That's what we were going for. Yeah. A black guy at one of his rallies asked him what he felt like Make America Great Again meant.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I think it was great at the time when families were united, even though we had slavery. They cared for one another. People were strong in the families. Our families were strong. Our country had a direction."
A direction towards disenfranchising an entire swath of people for
That's
no
right.
reason.
He also, at this same rally, called Native Americans and Asian Americans yellows and reds.
Yeah.
Reds and yellows.
Yeah.
So that is who Alabama is about to send to the Senate.
Sounds right. Sounds
and
like them.
I had a moment this week where like I really felt like, you know, I mean, I feel like Alabama is often getting it wrong. Like, and I certainly have no desire to go there for any reason, really, at all.
Especially not now.
But I know somebody who I love very dearly who is from there, and she just posted something that like really sort of like struck me on Facebook, where she was basically sort of like, you know, I live out here in California and I sort of like find myself being an Alabama apologist a lot, where I have to tell people that no, that's not who we really are, and you know, we still care for each other, and we still want what's, you know, best for each other, and we still are, you know, just like basically sort of like the things that she tells people to sort of like convince them that Alabama is not the most horrible place. And she was like, this is like breaking my heart, because like I don't feel like I can say that any longer.
Yeah.
So like I feel like you can only feel so bad for a group of people who elects a person like this.
Yeah.
But like, for the people who aren't voting for Roy Moore from Alabama, it's fucking heartbreaking in like a way that like I really like was near tears reading
this
it, because
like
she's a good writer too. But like I just was
this
like,
this is like discovering you live surrounded by monsters.
Yes.
Like actual monsters.
It's so upsetting.
This is,
I feel so terrible for them. I just want to like rescue all of them.
I know. Maybe California can. We're a fifth of the nation's economy.
We're back to have
all of our tax dollars back in state because they're not going to be making corporations pay anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we can use them to rescue Alabama.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so Alabama, think about your lives down there. I know you're not
monsters.
Listening to this podcast, people of Alabama.
Don't be monsters.
Don't be monsters.
I feel like it's probably like hopeless enough to be a Democrat in Alabama that you just have to be apolitical.
Yeah.
You know, like I think there are varying levels of how political you can afford to be in certain environments. Like I think it's like telling that like my parents do not have dinner parties that have Republicans at them because they live in New York. They do in upstate New York.
Sure.
And they in upstate New York, they can't afford to be as political. They're politically involved.
Yeah.
But they can't have a dinner party for a cause that's not explicitly a political cause.
Yeah.
And assume that everyone's a Democrat there. And they sometimes work with Republicans on town issues and stuff like that, and they can deal with that. And sometimes they can't. But, like, I feel like for the most part, in New York City, their dinner parties are 100% political.
Right.
Like, that's all we talk about.
Yeah.
But I feel like your parents are political people. They talk about politics with us a lot.
Yeah.
They talk about politics with amongst themselves.
Yeah.
But they live in a much more mixed world.
Yes.
And they're Iowans, so they've always lived in a much
more
mixed world.
Not a word about politics at the Thanksgiving meal that they hosted at their
home.
My
Thanksgiving meal was 100% only politics. That's all we talked about.
Yeah.
And I feel like your parents have to choose when to be political. And that's like a thing they know they have to do.
Yeah.
And they are okay with it. They do it. But I mean, like, I feel like if you're in a place like Alabama, you have to choose to be apolitical to survive.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you would want to murder everybody.
I know, right?
I mean, you'd be in a murderous rage at all times.
Yeah.
And there are too many guns there for people to be in a murderous rage.
I was going to say, and if people knew who you were, they would try and murder you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, so you got to lay low in Alabama.
Yeah, you do. You have to. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Other big news of the week.
Oh, my God.
The embassy in Israel is getting moved to Jerusalem.
Sheldon Adelson finally got his wish.
Got his wish. He bought enough politicians and advisors to the president that he's finally nailed it.
You recall that for the last 6,000 years that we've been recording this podcast, we've been talking about Sheldon Adelson. He is the sole reason that Newt Gingrich was a person who ran in the Republican primaries in 2012.
Right.
He is the sole reason that any number of Republican candidates have managed to survive any sort of fundraising rounds.
Yep.
He is a very rich man who cares very deeply about moving the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
That's right.
This is an issue that only is cared about by two sectors of the population. One is Jewish people, but not most Jewish people, like wackadoo Jewish people.
Yep.
And one is evangelical Christians.
Right.
And they have been working together on this issue for years. Some very, very rich Jews.
Isn't it nice that they could come together on this?
Have been for some reason. The reason, if you're ever wondering why any Jewish people vote Republican, it's often because of this issue. It's only really rich Jewish people that vote Republican, by the way.
Yeah.
Jewish people know their own history. They're not fools.
Yeah.
But Sheldon Adelson, a fool. And another fool, Chuck Schumer, who also advocated for this with President Trump.
Yeah.
He, I think, should lose his Senate position over this. I think that he should be stripped of any leadership position in the party. After this and what he said about what he did with the Iran deal, he doesn't represent our party values on Middle Eastern politics, and he should not be determining the direction of the party if he can't fall in line with our fucking values.
Yeah.
So
he might be, to some degree, representing his constituents.
Sure.
But he's the leader of the National Party.
Yeah.
In the Senate, anyway.
He's the leader of the Senate Democrats.
Yeah.
And the fact that he has had a hand in any of this, in something that is going to be so deadly and so destructive to so many people.
Yeah, it already is.
It already is.
Yeah.
Like, is, I think, reprehensible. He should be. And I know that I have roots in New York, and I love that New Yorkers are, in charge of the Senate Democrats. I want him out. I don't care who, I don't care if fucking Joe Manchin replaces him. Like, that is how angry I am about this. But in any case, so the reason this is controversial is because Jerusalem is claimed as a holy site and a city by all.
Yes.
And in conversations about the two-state solution, there is an assumption that I think East Jerusalem would be the capital of the Palestinian state. So by claiming Jerusalem as your capital in Israel, or as their capital in Israel, they are sort of saying, we are not here for the two-state solution.
Correct.
We no longer agree to the basic boundaries of what the solution was supposed to be.
Right.
And that, if you're a Palestinian, is a big fuck you.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this has caused tons of violence to break out.
Yeah, the leader of the Palestinians basically was like, the United States has removed themselves as the, like, broker, you know, the broker of a two-state solution.
Because we should have never been the broker because we're so obviously, like, in it for Israel that there's we're not fair brokers anyway.
Right.
But this is only going to make problems there worse because we also fund a lot of Israeli military expenditures. And the Israeli military is notoriously cruel when it comes to dealing with Palestinians.
Well, and
they're at it again.
They're at it again. Because this immediately, you know, I think he announced this on Tuesday or Wednesday, and the same day where protests broke out and people are already dying. And bombs are already going off. Militaries are already being used.
Right. The Israeli military has already responded to people throwing rocks with stun grenades and rubber bullets and tear gas and
Tear gas. Yeah, exactly.
This is always what happens is a bunch of Palestinians get together and throw rocks and then the Israeli military turns on them and is a military and not a loose gathering of people with rocks.
Yeah. Like 300 people were injured on Friday, 50 were injured on Thursday. I think some more were injured on Wednesday. There have been a handful of deaths. And also, there are protests breaking out all over, too. Yeah. Like, it's not just there. No. It's basically anywhere.
Protests in New York.
And there's been protests, like, throughout the Arab world, obviously, about this.
Yeah, because this is, like, a larger fuck you to the Arab world, too.
Well, right.
This is one of the major, you know, issues for all of the states that border Israel, all of which are Arab states.
Yeah.
This is a major issue for how Arab people in the Middle East think about the American perception of them and their value. I mean, this is just like wildly dangerous in a way that cannot be overstated.
Right, exactly.
This is how World War III breaks out. It's not going to be North Korea. No one gives two shits about North Korea.
Right.
It's something like this.
Right? I know.
You know?
Yeah. Mike Pence is supposed to be going to the Middle East pretty soon, and nobody is trying to see him while he's there any longer after this, because he was supposed to meet with the Palestinian foreign minister, and that's not going to be happening any longer. And the Christians in the region even know that it's a shit idea, because Coptic Church in Egypt was like, thanks, but no thanks. They said, in consideration of the decision that the U.S. administration took regarding Jerusalem, which was inappropriately timed and took no consideration of the feeling of millions of Arabs, the Egyptian Orthodox Coptic Church excuses itself from the meeting. I love that. No, we've got something else to do that day. Can I be excused? I got a note from mom.
Yeah, right. We're unfortunately busy with Coptic things.
Yeah, exactly.
To understand why the Republican Party is on board with this issue at all, because an issue that is of concern to a handful of really conservative Jews doesn't naturally make sense as an issue that Republicans would care about, even though a few of those Jewish donors are very, very wealthy.
Yeah.
But this is not something that is a concern to most American Jews. This isn't like the primary raison d'etre for most American Jews. So the reason that conservatives care about this has a lot to do with evangelical Christianity and the specific way that it developed in the United States.
Yeah. So,
and Brent's going to tell you about it because the story involves knowing about the Bible.
I walked in earlier and Lyle was like, I'm just reading about Christianity. And I was like, you are not reading about Christianity. You are reading about some crazy wacko bullshit that like somebody invented like in the late 1800s.
We've said before on the podcast that the reason that evangelicals care about this issue is for their crazy rapture to happen. Right. All the Jews have to go back to Israel.
Right.
And so they need Israel to be very Jewish so that Jewish people can go back there.
But
you're going to explain the theology behind
that. I had never really myself knew the specifics of that. Right. I knew that there was like some sort of like insanity, like where this was like wrapped up in like rapture prophecy.
Right.
But like, I don't do rapture prophecy.
Well, and in my mind, Christianity is 100% rapture prophecy because I don't know anything else about it other than that I should know what Easter is about, but forget every single year.
Yeah. So anyway, there is this term that is called, I had never even heard of this. It's called dispensational premillennialism.
Come on.
Which was invented.
It sounds like science, but it's not.
Right. Which was invented like as like a crazy sect of Christianity, like in the late 1800s, and sort of like took off in the 1970s. There were some writings about it. Really took off even further, like in the 90s. That's what these Left Behind books are about. Is like new ish. Mm-hmm. So evangelicals take the Bible literally. Like, it is a historical document to them. I know. And it is also, it's a historical document, and it's also, like, a future historical document.
Because it's a document of the future as it would appear in historical documents.
Correct. Yes. So not only is Jerusalem like important historically, because that's where Jesus was killed and then rose from the dead.
Right.
That's Easter, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. Weird. It's a weird story.
Right. But it's also super important for the end times. And here's why. Because...
which they, for some reason, want, by the way.
Yes.
I'm pro not end times. Sure. They're trying to bring them about.
Well, the end times is when, like, Jesus comes and then sort of, like, judges the non-believers and, like, turns to believers or doesn't or whatever.
Sure.
And then, like, reigns as king of Jerusalem and then there's, like, 1,000 years of peace or something.
Oh,
bonkers. But anyway, so apparently here's the crux of this dispensational premillennialism or whatever it is that can't
Again,
even say it.
Again, not science.
Right. Is that, so the Jews rejected Jesus as the Messiah, right?
Sure.
We know that. Jewish people
don't recognize Jesus as
right. That's the thing.
As a Messiah.
Right, okay. So God chose the church, basically like his believers, mm-hmm. to accomplish his mission of bringing about Jesus' return to earth.
Right. And it can't be the Jews because they don't believe that Jesus is anyone.
Correct. And so churches are supposed to be working to bring about the rapture of true believers.
Okay.
So, but as the story goes, God still loves the Jews and he wants to redeem them.
Well, they're chosen.
Well, right. Exactly. Yes. So therefore, they're going to experience this great religious rebirth and rebuild their temple in Jerusalem.
Oh,
which is sure. where this is all wrapped up
yeah.
in. Okay. And that, once that happens, mm-hmm. that is what's going to spark this series of cataclysmic, calamitous events that is going to culminate in the Battle of Armageddon, which is the last war of humanity. Okay?
Sounds
and
dramatic.
It's also going to cause the Jews to finally accept
oh.
Jesus as their savior. And after all of these things occur, but only after all of these things occur.
Right. They have to build the temple. We have to have the Armageddon battle. Jews have to accept Jesus as their savior.
Yes.
Et cetera.
Then Jesus can come back to earth and rule God's kingdom and have 1,000-year reign of peace. And it's all going to happen in Jerusalem.
What happens to Shinto people in this?
You know what, Lila? I don't fucking know.
Also, what happens to half Jewish people?
I don't know. Well, like, it depends. If they take Jesus as their savior, then they're probably going to be fine.
I mean, will I, though, like, as a non-believer but half chosen, have the benefit of being half chosen, supersede my initial wipeout in the non-believer phase?
Yeah.
Because I think after the Jews only accept Jesus as their savior after all the non-believers are gone in the Battle of Armageddon.
Right.
But if you're half Jewish, that complicates things a little.
Yeah.
Because how do you know?
Yeah.
Who is it according to Jewish law that you're Jewish? Is it according to Christian law that you're Jewish? I mean, whose law is it? And what do you do with all the people who are only sort of Jewish? It's a lot of sort of Jews out there. A lot of us.
You know what? Ask somebody who has any earthly idea about
what
dispensational premillennialism, because up until 3 hours ago, it wasn't me. Okay?
Because this is a complicated...
this is the thing, though. Like, this is not just, like, a thing that evangelicals just sort of, like, have on a list of things that they believe. Like, this is, like...
the central tenet of
this is, like, what they are, like, trying to have happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they are actively trying,
like,
to make Jews return to Israel.
As members of God's church.
Sure.
Who have been assigned by God himself.
This task.
To bring about all of these things.
Yeah. This checklist is very specific in their case.
Yeah.
It's not just about being a good person.
Right.
It's not at all about being a good person. In fact, it has nothing to do with being a good person.
Not a
thing. Their Christianity has a very specific checklist that involves sending Jews to Israel, them building a temple, the War of Armageddon or whatever happening, all the other people dying, Jews then accepting Jesus as their personal savior, and then for some reason after that, peace happens. But no one has clarified yet what happens to people who don't practice either of those religions.
Yeah.
And, like, there are literally a billion people in China and a billion people in India.
Well,
and a lot of them don't practice either of those religions.
Well, I have a feeling in most evangelicals' minds, those people are
toast.
Big time fucked. Yeah.
God,
like,
it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's a tough criteria to meet.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that.
Is there any crazy church in Asia that has a similar prophecy, but where all of Europe and the Americas gets wiped out?
Oh, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Like, what if we're all plotting against each other?
I would hope that there
right?
is.
I mean, if we're going to do it, let's commit.
Right? Oh, boy. So anyway, like, that is...
That's literally what we're basing U.S. foreign policy on right now, by the way.
Prophecy.
Prophecy and Sheldon Adelson's personal nutitude.
Correct.
The two things that should not be determining U.S. foreign policy
correct.
In the Trump White House currently are.
Yeah. And the other thing is that there is no way that Donald Trump could ever...
Doesn't know any of this.
...possibly explain to you what whatever the fuck it is. I've already forgotten, and I don't know that I was saying it correctly to begin with.
And I don't want to know more about it, so
right,
it's fine.
Exactly. But he knows what his advisors are telling him.
Yeah.
And they're crazy.
Exactly.
You know, because one of them was quoted this week, Robert Jeffress, as saying, "Jerusalem has been the object of affection of both Jews and Christians down through history and the touchstone of prophecy." Like, we're having people advise the president on foreign policy about prophecy.
Yeah.
I want you to think about that for like, just well, let it.
And
let
it
just,
takes a moment to think about
wash
because
over you.
If you're not a church person, touchstone of prophecy is a phrase that means nothing to you.
Yeah.
In this
but
context,
like, you know what prophecy is, and you know that it's not a thing that like you.
It's like
base
how
decisions
when
on.
I've been to Brent's Christmas concerts, and periodically there's a pastor there that gives some sort of meandering speech. Sure. I've noticed that there's a point where suddenly everything stops making sense to me.
Yeah,
but
it just sounds like words.
Sounds like words. It's like a word salad. But all of the words are things I don't care about. They're all words about, you know, the mystery of Christ and God's
sure.
love. And they're all words that ultimately amount to nothing to me. And that you should be looking out for that with president's advisors. Because they specifically should not be using the word salad that you might find in a church where you stop following because nothing makes any
right.
sense.
The advisor that President Trump needed was someone telling him what was going to happen in Gaza after he made this announcement.
We should be careful about moving the capital from Tel Aviv to Israel because that will spark violence in the region.
Right. And I don't
That's what you say.
Yeah, I don't think, and not enough people had his ear.
Someone could
with
have said to
thoughts.
Him, Israelis will die. You know, they
make it easy for him.
Make it easy for him. He doesn't care about Palestinians. Don't tell him about them.
Right.
Tell him Israelis could die over this. Do you want to kill your friends, the Israelis? Because Israelis will die over this, and they shouldn't
they
have to.
No, they shouldn't.
Just like Palestinians, they are people who shouldn't die.
And a lot of Israelis on the ground
don't
were
want
not.
This shit.
Yeah, because they're not trying to have
they're
all.
They're not trying to fucking die.
No, exactly.
I mean, for God's sakes, they've been living in a war zone for their entire lives. It's like, enough is enough.
Yeah.
They just want to go, you know,
some
to the beach or whatever.
Buffoon president who doesn't understand the repercussions of decisions that he makes.
Right? Like, let them fucking
like
go to school without having to worry about being bombed to death.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
It's madness.
All right.
In any case.
Tax bill.
Other disasters.
Yeah.
We have. Right. So, before we begin, you can still call your senators about the tax bill.
It's not law.
That is still an option on the table. It is not law. It will not be law until they vote one more time on it.
That's right.
Which means they will have another vote on the record that will have troublesome consequences.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Hopefully
right. for them, not for us.
Yeah. You'll remember last week the tax bill had taken me to a dark place.
Yes.
I'm still in the dark place.
Sure.
But...
ever more convinced they could mess this up.
Yes. There have, yes.
Just slightly, you're just like slightly edging towards
a
place.
There's a glimmer. Every once in a while I read something and like, there's like a spark of hope. It's faint.
It's faint, sure.
It's faint. But there is still.
It's growing.
There is still a way for them to figure out how to bone this.
Yeah. As they have figured out for everything.
So
if there's one thing they're consistent
they
at.
They haven't passed major legislation
it's
yet.
It's fucking everything up. So they could fuck this up. And we could help them.
Yes,
by telling them
yes.
that they should not vote for nonsense.
Yeah.
But here, so there are a few things that are still in discussion in terms of creating a compromise bill for this legislation.
Yes.
The biggest one remains the state and local tax deduction problem, SALT. Because finally this week, the entire California GOP delegation was like, fuck no.
Yeah.
And that joins other delegations from high tax states in finally realizing that they can't let their constituents pay the price for Kansas's nonsense.
Right.
So the compromise had been that the state and local tax deductions for income sales, for income and sales taxes, and include sales tax, by the way, which is not only a regressive tax and therefore should be definitely deductible, but also income tax, which is, would be repealed, but homeowners could deduct up to $10,000 in local property taxes. Here's one problem with that already that I can identify, which is that high tax states are also high property value states, right. And therefore your local property taxes are likely to be quite high in those states. So nobody gives a shit about this local property tax. Plus, no young people own any property.
Right.
So in the entire United States, basically.
Right.
So this is just like a big fuck you to young people, which they were intending, but whatever. But now, California actually doesn't have that problem because our property taxes are pretty contained by state law. As a whole, we don't have a problem.
I think we've passed a prop about that because they were going
out of
crazy.
Control because our property values are really high here. But our income taxes are very high. And because of that, a lot of GOP House members who represent California districts represent fairly wealthy suburban California districts. And they were going to see that, you know, the corporate tax rates are low, but they're sort of mid-range wealthy-ish people, the $200,000
and under people. They want to be able to write off their income taxes.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
They pay very high ones here.
Yeah.
They should. And so they finally were like, okay.
Hang on.
Never mind.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to figure out a compromise on that. One idea is that they allow taxpayers to deduct up to $10,000 in either income or property taxes, or a combination of them.
Sure.
I don't think that's sufficient.
That's not going to be enough.
Because lot of these wealthy people are paying much more,
than that combined.
But also, they're having to talk about raising the corporate tax rate to pay for it.
From 20% to 21%.
Now, initially, Trump's line in the sand was that they could not let the corporate tax rate go over 20%. And already, there's members being like, what's going to happen now? They're going to bring it, raise, they'll suddenly say they need something else and raise it to 25.
Well, and that is the problem. Because
this is why we haven't lowered it, you guys.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Bingo.
It's not mathematically possible.
Right, exactly. But it has sparked a whole sort of like, well, if we're going to raise it to 21 or 22% for this reason, then I want this. Let's raise it to 23%.
Exactly.
I mean, nobody wants to raise it 23%, at least Republican-wise. But like, if they feel like they can get a deal out of only raising it 1% or a half a percent or whatever, then they're going to try. And then that's when the whole thing comes
crumbling
down.
And there are a bunch of Republicans that are advocating for little things that will make a big difference in their constituencies. Like Rubio has been really pushing to double the per child tax credit. Little things like that that are going to slowly start to creep in.
And he introduced this amendment in the Senate and it got voted down. And he was going to pay for it by having it go up to like 20.5% or something like that. Yeah.
So there's...
So he's already like, I see. Those California Republicans got what they wanted here. So like,
Now, the other thing that... The other issues that are going to have to be worked out are that there are differences in the number of tax brackets in the House and Senate bill. The House bill shrunk it to 4. The Senate retains 7 but changes them, lowers them slightly.
Yep.
At the top end.
Yep.
The mortgage interest deduction is much more generous in the Senate bill.
Yep.
The alternative minimum tax is different in the two bills. That is the tax that ensures that very high-earning people and corporations pay at least a minimum tax rate. So if they have enough deductions to stop paying taxes entirely, then they're required to pay a certain base amount. There's the pass-through of businesses, which was Ron Johnson's pet project.
Yeah,
and they're treated differently by the
company.
Bills. That's right. Because Ron Johnson wanted to make more money at his plastics company by maintaining the pass-through deductions.
Yeah.
And then also the mandate.
Yeah, it's only in the Senate bill.
It's only in the Senate bill. It saves a lot of money, so it's likely to end up in
and
both
into the
bills.
House bill.
But
yeah.
I think that this actually could be the thing that kills the bill, not in the House, but in the Senate. I know that all of those fools voted for it before, but like Susan Collins was promised a bunch of things that are not going to materialize in this bill. I think that in the intervening period, she's probably getting nonstop calls about this. I think that this is going to be one of the focuses of the activism around this bill in the Senate. And we could end up seeing that if they aren't getting the deals they were promised, because they were promised deals to vote for that last version.
Yeah.
Then
because this
could
is gonna
kill it. I don't.
Yeah, and
I mean, it may not. They don't care.
And I think that it should be what we're focusing our attention on because we were already able to.
We
like,
killed
this,
it once.
This basically
twice,
is
four times.
I was gonna say this is basically by removing the mandate. It is basically ending Obamacare.
Yeah,
I mean
that
in
ends
not
the Affordable
so
Care
many,
Act.
Right, exactly. So
it certainly ends the controlled price system in the Affordable
Care
exactly.
Act. Exactly, and bingo. And that is the thing. Everybody's premiums are gonna skyrocket at that point. So I think that if we can effectively explain that to people, I don't know that we can, but that I think could be our best hope of sinking this, because there are enough people in the House and or Senate who, if reminded properly, are not going to want all of their constituents dying of not having healthcare.
I have another thing in mind as a way of threatening Republican senators and congressmen specifically about this.
Great.
Which is, I think that all of the high tax states should get together and promise that collectively they will raise the corporate tax rate to whatever they damn well please. And just let corporations try to leave. We have two major industries that are heavily built in California. The Wall Street is in New York City.
Yeah.
They tried to move the Goldman Sachs headquarters to New Jersey already, and no one would fucking cross the river. So they had to move them back, and they put all the non-essential personnel there.
Yeah.
It is going to be hard for these big corporations that are reliant on industries that are focused in these coastal liberal communities to move their headquarters.
Yeah.
They need educated people to come to those places. They need people who, you know, they need people to be willing to work for them and live in the place that they are.
Right.
In industries like Silicon Valley, in industries like Hollywood, in industries like finance, one of the attractions of working in those industries is that you get to live in cosmopolitan capital cities.
Right. Exactly.
It's not to live in fucking Wyoming.
Yeah.
So let them try to move.
Right.
All of the industries that could move to the Midwest and the South have done it. They are already lower tax states.
Right.
So those industries have already made the choice.
Right. Yes.
But good luck.
Apple could have gone to
any estate.
Alabama already.
Exactly. And the reason they didn't is because educated people want to live in San Francisco. They don't want to live in Alabama. And that is going to be a deterrent regardless. But it's going to be a worse deterrent if these large high tax states get together and basically fund their own utopia.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be really hard to get smart people to want the $1 million when half as much buys you a significantly better life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what I think that they should do. I think the Democratic Governors Association should get together and be like, we're going to set up our own pool fund.
I like it.
We're all going to agree to raise the corporate tax rate in our states. We're going to fund the states that lose business. We will make sure to fill in the gaps.
Yep.
And we will just create a utopia among our constituents where we will have universal health care and we will have free college educations and we will have all of these things.
Yeah.
And let them try to take the business away from us. California is one-fifth of the nation's economy. We pay for states like Alabama to exist.
Yeah.
Let them try this.
Yeah.
Let's keep the money.
I'm into it.
I don't need to pay these dumb states to be fucking everyone over.
Call somebody and tell them.
I know.
Write somebody a letter.
I don't know who to call. I don't either. I got to call somebody, though.
Well, don't call Chuck Grassley.
No.
At all. Well, call him.
Call
but don't tell him that idea.
Tell him he's a fucking asshole.
That's the idea that you should share with him.
Yeah.
Yes. Because
earlier this week, he was asked about the estate tax.
Yeah. He said, I think not having the estate tax recognizes the people that are investing, as opposed to those that are just spending every damn penny they have, whether it's on booze or women or movies.
Chuck Grassley thinks that you spend all of your money on booze, women, and movies.
Right, and that's why
That's why you don't invest.
That's why you don't have $11 billion to pass down, you know, or $1 million, excuse me.
You shouldn't enjoy your life.
Right.
You should invest so that you can have $11.5 million to pass down to your children.
And not be taxed
taxed.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
If you would just give up the drink.
Exactly.
Then you too could have $11 million to pass down to your children.
If you could give up that damn movie habit.
Yes.
You would finally have enough money to give your children $11.5 million.
That's right.
Finally.
Yeah.
And certainly the women.
Of course,
if you give up the women, you won't have the children. So that
complicates
things a little.
If only I knew that that's all it took.
I would like to contend that as someone who doesn't drink and almost never goes to the movies.
Yeah.
I'm already there. And yet,
here you are.
Without the...
Using a budget app on your phone to make sure you don't overspend.
Right? I'm so far from the $11 million mark that I can't even tell you.
Right. Was I not supposed to share
It's wild.
That, by the way?
No. I think everyone should use a budget app on their phone.
They should.
I've recently become very enamored with personal budgeting.
I know.
It's saving me a lot of heartache.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in any case, he claims the statement was taken out of context, but that's just what you say when you've said something dick like this and you don't want to be asked about it further.
Yeah, it's what you say when you said exactly what you meant.
Yeah, what context, by the way?
Right. That
how could this have been taken out of context to the extent that it changes
the context was being interviewed by the Des Moines Register and asked specifically about your thoughts on the estate tax.
Yeah, that's the whole context.
In which you answered
your thoughts on
the estate tax.
He thinks poor people are lazy and spend all their money on the drink.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Chuck Grassley.
That's right.
It's not a proud time for Iowa right now.
It's really not. No, because
Steve King also stepped in this week. Yeah,
something racist. Go figure this week. But yeah. But again, his constituents are really loving it. So
I bet.
What do you do?
Western Iowa.
Did you ask Steve King to resign because he's a racist?
If we could, we would have done that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. This is my favorite story of the week because it's so freaking tragic and also hilarious. There was an article in the New York Times where some of Trump's aides talked about his habits at the White House.
Specifically his television habits?
Right, which he claimed about a month ago that he didn't have time to be watching TV because he was reading too many documents.
Which is also
which is
interesting
hilarious
for
in and of itself.
A number of reasons. Right. Also because he tweets on a television schedule. Like, he tweets in direct response to TV all the time.
Yes.
So, like, that wasn't
also,
even
like,
plausible
no,
then.
No, I'm reading the document. There's just so many documents with words and things and facts.
Yeah, it's those documents they had to write with his name peppered in them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So he'd actually look
at
them.
Oh, boy. So, anyway, but apparently when he's not reading documents, right, he's watching up to eight hours of television.
That's how many hours
per day
you likely spend at work.
At work, correct.
If you spent all day at work just watching television but also not accomplishing
you know
other
what?
Things.
I spend my day at work being paid as my job to watch television. And I still probably don't get through 8 hours of it in the day.
Yeah, because, I literally work in television right. and can't watch 8 hours of television.
Because I am reading documents.
Yeah.
Actual ones.
Read more documents than Donald Trump as someone who works in the field of making television.
Correct. Yes. But hilariously, there's some good quotes in here. One of the aides called it a, quote, hour-by-hour battle for self-preservation. Because he wakes up at 5:30 every morning, and he tunes in to the TV in the White House's master bedroom.
Right.
And he flips to CNN for news, which is rich because he calls them
fake news. Right.
But at least, you know, it heartens me to some degree that he knows that, like, if he wants to get an actual fact, he's got to, right, like, go over to CNN. so he watches CNN for the news, and then he moves to Fox and Friends for, quote, comfort and messaging ideas, and then sometimes watches MSNBC's Morning Joe because friends suspect it, quote, fires him up for the day. Yeah. But yes, exactly. It's television. It's his watching that is like serves as his ammo for his outbursts on Twitter, because it's like while he's watching Fox and Friends that he will like tweet out exactly what they just say, or while he's watching CNN that he's calling them fake news.
And that's
or what,
why
like,
he becomes obsessed with someone like Mika Brzezinski.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
leads you to believe that he's watching Morning Joe, which, by yeah. the way, is the most credible thing about him so far
right.
that I've heard.
Exactly.
Because Morning Joe is at least the one thing everyone in the Beltway watches.
Right. But if he misses an important segment, he watches it later on what he apparently calls his Super TiVo.
Which might just be a regular TiVo.
I would assume that it is. Yes. Uh-huh. there's also a 60-inch TV in the White House dining room that he apparently keeps an eye on during meetings, which I'm sure he's supposed to be listening to. That's probably when he was probably watching the TV when somebody was telling him what would happen if he named Jerusalem
exactly.
the capital of Israel.
Yeah.
And he likes to watch Jeanine Pirro, who sure. apparently we know is basically
well, we know
like taking
to,
phone calls from
yeah,
him.
Yeah, we know he likes to watch him because
she's
he tweets about
messaging
it.
From the White House
yeah.
or, you know, getting her messaging from the White
exactly.
House. Exactly. Sean Hannity, of course, sure. Laura Ingraham, of course. And this is also a thing that I love. He apparently also occasionally, quote, hate watches CNN's Don Lemon, which is
we
the,
all do.
I was going to say is the first thing that I have found in common with Donald
oh my
Trump
God.
Because let's face it, Don Lemon is terrible.
Yeah, nobody love watches Don Lemon.
Right. But sometimes you end up watching him.
Yeah. There are times where Don Lemon is what you're watching. And sometimes you don't know why you're doing it, but you do it anyway. And
that
like
exactly
Donald Trump,
right.
that has happened to everyone.
It really has.
Don Lemon entraps almost anyone in his
yeah.
in his circle of hate watching.
That's right. Yeah.
But so that's the concerning thing about that. All for me is that we are paying him that much money a year, more money than I make a year, to watch TV news
yeah.
all day, which is a job I would happily do.
Sure. Well, he also claimed...
If that's what being president is,
right.
sign me up.
Right. He also claimed, because he was a big, you know, one of his big things on Twitter before becoming president was complaining about how much golf President Obama played.
Yeah.
And
he said he wouldn't have time for it when he was president.
He said that he was never going to...
He's golfed basically, every weekend.
He's always golfing.
Yeah.
I don't know how he has time to do anything other than golf and watch television now that I know how much time that he's watching television.
I would contend he has no time to do any of it. I think he takes a photograph every day of him pretending
right, in
to
front
work.
Of a podium or something
yeah.
or at a desk.
But I yeah. think that's about... he does have time to go to rallies. Knowing the rally
yes,
plus
does.
The TV plus the golf schedule, I'm even more concerned that there's no time for other things.
Right. Yeah.
And this is a man who doesn't sleep, so I know there's time.
Right.
But That still sounds like too much time to
me. That's not good.
Golf takes like 1 trillion hours every time you play a game.
Yeah.
It's the longest sport in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And it's boring.
Yeah.
It's boring, and I'm surprised that he doesn't have a television following him through the golf course, because that would be the only time I would find time to watch 8 hours of television.
Right, exactly. Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, we're all going to die anyway, so it doesn't matter, because California is entirely under
Yeah, we told siege you already that we're fires. Walking around and running air purifiers in our apartments and walking around with face masks on to be able to walk down the street to Starbucks.
there
it's
been,
not great.
There's
so
like,
we just made our lives sound really hard, and we're not affected by it. We didn't mean to sound insensitive, because right. people... Are
People's
having to homes evacuate.
Are being burned.
Exactly, right. So at least we don't have that. But yeah, it's.
We had a fire right in the center of LA that almost
yeah,
made it to
did.
The Getty.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sure if you're a person, you
and
saw
those
pictures.
I was going to say, those were the pictures that were the. Yeah. I mean, all of the pictures were sort of horrifying, but those were the ones where it, like, was. If you were on the 405, like, you could basically. It looked like you were just driving into a. Blazing inferno.
Yeah, and that's the busiest freeway in LA. So for
right.
context, there were not even that many cars on it during the picture taking
right.
moment, but yeah. it had to be closed for fire. That is literally the major passage from West LA to the Valley.
Right,
that's
exactly.
a major
parts of West LA, which is not really far from
no,
here.
It's only
is
maybe
a couple
4 miles,
probably.
Yeah.
yeah, was without power for yeah. a brief amount of time during this. So
and
it's
rich people in Bel Air's houses burned.
Yeah,
speaking of the real tragedies.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, yeah. this was. This was the kind of fire, like, the Ventura fire is huge, and
right.
it's affected a lot of people, and it's burned a lot of homes, and it's
yeah.
it's disastrous.
That's the one where, like, hundreds of thousands of people yeah. have had to evacuate.
The thing
it's
about...
It's now moved from Ventura County into Santa Barbara County, too.
Yeah.
So it's not super contained either, which is
no,
sort of
it's and we've had high winds.
Right.
The thing about the Skirball fire that I think made everyone nervous is, had that gotten out of control, that really would have hit the most populous area in the region.
Yeah, that's like, that was like... Yeah, I mean, you said it. That's a huge passageway, but it's like also like right in the.
It's
not
center of town.
It's not in the middle of city because
no.
it's on the west side. But I mean, it like runs through the city.
This
I
is
mean,
LA.
It's not,
there's no middle of the city.
Right, well, right. Exactly,
this
yeah,
it would
exactly.
hit a
yeah.
very populous
but it's very
area.
Near UCLA. UCLA closed down classes mm-hmm. for a while. I mean, it was like that
and
was crazy. And they were also warning about because of these high winds. They were like. Embers of this fire can just basically like blow miles away and
yeah.
then just like start a new fire.
Yeah.
So,
and that happened a couple times in Malibu. There were fires that
yeah,
little fires that started in Malibu.
Fires in Malibu. Yeah.
Yeah, it's concerning. Who knew that having this much rain would leave us this vulnerable
right, exactly.
to
well,
all these
remember,
fires?
We talked about
we
that
talked
actually
about
because
it, yeah.
so many people were actually excited when we got the rain because we needed the rain, but like everybody's initial thought was like, "Oh, great, we're not going to have a fire season." But apparently, the exact opposite is what happens.
Well, we had all
because,
this new foliage.
Yeah, because the rain brings things growing.
Exactly.
And that
you can't
is
have
what
a fire
burns.
In a dirt patch.
Correct.
Which is what we had currently been living.
Currently
or,
have.
We have
yeah.
been living in.
Right, exactly.
So
you can have mudslides.
Right.
So
we had a lot of those.
So, you know, there's...
there's dangers around every corner in
right,
California.
Right, exactly. Yes, I know. I'm like, God, here I just got my earthquake kit.
I know.
Sent
I
to my house.
Don't have one.
I
gotta
I mean,
get
I
one.
I need a fire kit now? What about?
Yeah, I know. Like, what do you do with a fire kit, too?
I don't even know.
I have a kit.
God, is that
of
even
some
a thing?
Well, and you got now you gotta have emergency supplies in your car because you might have to just evacuate. They were like, park your cars facing out and all this shit.
Oh, nuts.
It's terrifying.
God.
It's like you can never escape the threat of danger in this town.
I know.
No matter where you turn, it's danger
right.
everywhere. And
it's either natural disasters, it's Hollywood executives forcing you to have sex with them.
We're living in a real disaster
right.
zone.
Remember when we just told you how great California was?
It's great at voting.
right.
We're good at voting.
We were just kidding about that. It's actually terrible.
It's a nightmare, but...
we're coming to Alabama. No, we're not. We would never.
No, there you can have natural disasters and no one will even come to help you.
right, exactly.
I mean, if we're going to be in a danger zone, at least let's be in a state where Trump didn't even declare a state of emergency until Friday, even though there have been fires burning all over town for weeks.
Right.
But yeah. at least we had California
yeah.
to come to our rescue. At
yeah.
least we had that.
Now, the other big drama with the fires this week, and you were, I'm sure it was on your radar, but you were not in the city and you were also not working in an office place because everybody was obviously talking about the fires, but what they were really talking about
was the bunnies,
was the rabbit rescue
yeah.
and who was the rabbit rescuer.
Yeah.
That was a real hot topic.
That
of
conversation
like,
caught
if
me.
If you found yourself at the water cooler this week,
yeah.
and we're in an uncomfortable moment and had to think of something to say.
You talked about the rabbit.
You talked about the rabbit video.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this video that went super viral of this guy pulling over on the side of the freeway, like
amidst
running,
a blazing
blazing
fire.
Inferno, to go save a wild rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nobody knew who this person was.
Right.
So on Friday, Oscar Gonzalez says, "It was I, the rabbit rescuer. It was me." And then he did interviews with a couple media outlets where his story was different every time.
Right. There were a few rabbits and there was a family of rabbits.
There was a whole family of rabbits. Yeah, it was like the story of like how big the fish is that you catch, exactly. Basically. Yeah. He had saved a rabbit sanctuary by the end of the day or started his own. Right. Yeah. So anyway, people were maybe like, you know what? That Oscar Gonzalez, I've got some questions about that guy. So the next day, this guy named Caleb Waldman claimed that it was he who saved the rabbits. And this seems more likely because it is backed up by the fact that it was definitely he who saved the rabbits. And definitely was not Oscar Gonzalez.
Follow-up photos of the rabbit through the entire recovery process.
Right. So he took the rabbit to the Conejo Valley Veterinary Hospital where the rabbit was treated. Oscar Gonzalez claimed that he let the rabbit family back into the wilds in a fire-free safe zone. So that was just already... Like, he should have had the facts.
Yeah.
Like, once you're going to lie and make up a story, like, at least see, like, if the, like, what did he think? The guy just, like, and you know what?
Drove the rabbit to a new forest?
I am not here to tell you that there couldn't have been two rabbit rescues.
I bet there were more than
happened
two.
That night. But there was only one that was caught on camera, and it was not the Oscar Caleb Gonzalez Alderman. One. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would contend that there were probably a ton of wild animal rescues that were probably fairly ill-advised.
Sure.
Where... ill-equipped people, like, wildly, like, ran into blazing infernos to try to save, like, deer and rabbits and chipmunks and all sorts of things. I mean, that's the kind of thing that people do in these situations because they don't know what to do.
Right.
And it's a wonderful sentiment.
It is.
Saving a rabbits are cute, don't really harm anyone.
Remember when I was trying to get a rabbit for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm allergic to them, like all things, so I can't have rabbits.
Yeah.
I can't even touch a rabbit.
Yeah.
It's too bad. In any case.
Anyway, that's been solved anyway.
Yeah. That's at least the one mystery in this week of chaos.
That's right.
That we have a definitive answer to. Caleb Waldman saved the rabbit.
Was the hero rabbit savior.
Where the fire department was like, nobody should go save rabbits.
Right. Don't do that. Don't get out of your car on the freeway.
Certainly not if there's a fire burning next to you.
No. Don't do that.
Don't do any of it.
No. There's enough rabbits to go around.
If you are in a fire-free zone and you see a puppy with a tag that clearly belongs to someone.
Yeah, get it.
That's a time to get that puppy.
Yeah, get involved.
I mean, don't let that dog get hit by a car.
No.
Even if it doesn't have a tag. Save the dog that shouldn't be hit by a car.
Yeah.
A random rabbit hopping around in the forest.
Yeah.
In the middle of a time that you could also die in a blazing inferno is probably not the right time to save rabbits.
But also, you know, you did it.
You did.
So congratulations.
Congratulations. At least it worked out.
Yeah. But can you imagine, like, having third-degree burns all over your body and then having to tell your family it was because you got out of your car on the freeway to save a wild rabbit? I mean, we have to think about our lives.
Well, they did have to warn people that wild animals were going to come into our into the city because they were trying to escape, you know, the fires.
Oh, maybe that's where I'll get my rabbit.
Yeah, you might be able to just capture one hopping down the street.
House.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ray could have a rabbit friend.
That's
they could bounce around together.
That's right. Yeah.
They could do whatever rabbit activities there
that's
are.
What I'm
play
for.
Catch together.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but okay.
Maybe the rabbit can toss the thing, and Ray can fetch it and bring it back.
All right.
She knows how to play fetch now. I don't see why that would be.
Yeah.
She learned that in her old age. I don't see why she can't learn how to play with a rabbit.
Yeah, turns out you can teach an old dog new tricks.
That's right. In any case, that's news this week. We will be back next week with news.
Hopefully a sunk tax bill.
That's right.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But we'll talk to you then.
Not promising anything.
Right.
But hopefully.
All right. Talk to you next week. Bye.